First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning, I got confirmed in...
Hello and welcome to the Digital Freethought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, April 21st, 2024. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5, and we have a couple of guests with us today. Sarah, welcome, and welcome back, River.
Welcome back, Sarah.
As usual, we have our co-host with us, Wombat. Hello, Wombat.
Hey, it's me, the Wombat.
And Digital Freethought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religions, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not, I guarantee it. In Knoxville, here in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of 1,100 of us. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about us after the mid-show break, so be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
Only perfect people can throw stones. And
what?
Just want... I know. We got a lot of cool topics. I've had a lot of stuff in my chest, and we're running out of episodes soon, because right now, what number are we at right at this moment?
Oh, this is 364. One more show after this, and we'll be at 365, which theoretically is our last show.
Is the cap. Yep. So I want to get some stuff off my chest, or else I'm going to go crazy with all these topics in my head. Sarah, yeah. Thank you very much for joining the show. And we also have Riv, who's been also a long time repeat participant in the show. How about we get into it? I wanted to talk about a passage that was sticking in my mind, because sometimes I go through the week and something just sticks in my head and I'm like, I have to wait until Sunday before I can talk about this. And the thing that brought up was when the parable where Jesus sees a woman who is being surrounded by guys for the crime of committing adultery of all things, and all the dudes are about to throw rocks and stone this woman to death. And then Jesus is like, oh man, a bunch of guys piling up on a single lady with armed projectiles.
Yeah,
I got to step in and tell them, hey, it's okay for you to do this only if you hadn't commit sin.
Yeah. Like, what a condition.
Yeah. In my mind, I'm like, only he without sin can throw the first stone. And I just thought to myself, man, what a lost opportunity. What an irresponsible message to give. Because you can, of course, interpret that as like, oh, what Jesus is saying is you should really look into your own past and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, what he's explicitly saying is perfect people can throw stones. If you are without sin and a male, you can kill anybody.
Well, further, if there's no God, then since sin is a trespass against God, and yes, God doesn't exist, then anybody can throw stones. So it's like a loophole he's thrown in there.
Even if he did exist, it's still saying, like, if you're cool with God, you can throw stones at people for non-violent
crimes. Which is the wrong message.
Yeah. For non-violent crimes.
It's still laying on the foundation that, if you're without... You know, if you have done anything wrong, you can administer this law, which presupposes that the law is just in the first place.
Yes.
But it doesn't say, don't throw stones. It's not nice. He doesn't say that. And he doesn't, go ahead.
No, please.
Oh, like you were saying before the show, where's the man? I mean, there's two sins here, right?
Yes.
You know, if a man is visiting a prostitute, why shouldn't they bring him out and throw stones at him? It's misogynistic.
Right. Assuming that even the lady was straight, there had to have been a guy there who committed adultery too. Why isn't Jesus like, hey, shouldn't we also be stoning the guy? Or, you know, in general, you should just be like, hey, don't throw stones at people. Don't do violent punishments for nonviolent crimes. That's not cool. Don't do that. I'm Jesus, by the way. Hi, it's nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Like, you could have done that. Sarah, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts is that kind of passage gives Christians justification for their judgment. And so even though there are probably some Christians that say, oh, we shouldn't judge, there's plenty of Christians that say, well, because I'm a Christian, I'm good with God. And so I can just go ahead and judge whoever I think I can.
Well, not only that, but you know, if you're a Christian and you believe that your sins are all forgiven, then you are without sin, right?
Right.
So you can throw stones, verbally or otherwise.
I hit the reset point last Sunday, so I'm good.
If I pray, I'm good. I'm going to pick up some stones and throw them at people. Not only that, but it's not anybody that's a Christian. Let's not fool ourselves. It's not Christians can do this. It's he who is without sin. So it's just another, you know, stone in the wayboat of men can do what they want.
And their
women
internal
stone for adultery.
In their internal conversations, nobody but a Christian can be without sin.
Yeah, because but even if you are without sin, you still have to be he. Even without a sin, you still have to be a male to be able to pull off the throw of stone. It's not like Jesus said, hey, only those who are with my father can throw stones. He's like, no, only he who is without sin can commit sin.
Now, adultery. Take it literally,
that's why we're not stoning
do.
The guy. We're only stoning the woman, and only he who's without sin can stone the woman. Thank you very much. I'm Jesus Christ. I'm very explicit and clear. See you later, everybody. I feel like if you have that much responsibility and you know the human condition and you know how we interpret things moving forward in the future, and you know how things will be interpreted in with how societies will evolve after that point in time, it's your responsibility, particularly as the Son of God, to make it explicitly clear how to conduct yourself as a reasonable, empathetic, and quality-driven person in society where you know your actions have consequences. And a clear rule of, hey, don't throw stones at people, really, and it might lead to more problems like other people throwing other stuff. But basically, if you clarified, like, hey, don't throw stones at people. And if we're writing this story down, let me add some more clarity for how to make bylaws for how to treat people for nonviolent crimes and how we should equitably afford those to all parties, regardless of what sex they are, what color skin they are, where they come from. If you're writing this down and I'm the Son of God and you're willing to listen to me regardless, let's make this absolutely clear. All right, start writing, guys. You could have done that. But instead, he's just like, nah, perfect people, if you're perfect, you can throw stones. By the way, here's a hack for how to be perfect. You just clap your hands and you say, Jesus, I love you. And next thing you know, you can do whatever you want. That's not cool. That's not cool. Yeah. Not cool.
Yeah. And I always say, never trust anybody who can be forgiven of any sin simply by talking to their ceiling. I mean, you know, what couldn't they do that they can't get out of jail free in their own mind?
Okay, very cool. All right, so next. Oh, Rib, please.
Well, I wanted to say, there's a really good point that Larry just added on to that. In the earlier parts, not a huge spoiler, in the earlier parts of Equalizer 3, Denzel's character is kind of on the bed and he's kind of, you know, passed out nearly. And the guy helps him, you know, he asks him, you know, are you good or are you bad? And he said, I don't know. And I was thinking, he said he wouldn't have helped him if he said he was good. Because in that situation, anyway, yeah, it's just kind of an interesting little bit of perspective and honesty and humility.
But what's the old saying? Everybody's the hero of their own story.
Yes.
Yeah. So everybody's would think that they're good, unless, of course, they have a very bad inferiority complex or something.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, it's up to our leaders to be clear with their rules and not leave it up to interpretation. Because even when I, you know, looked up online for how weirdly this could be interpreted, if you were to do it explicitly, like as given, it gave me the Bible and I didn't have any critical revisionist mindset, right? And I just said, Jesus literally said in black and white that he without sin can throw the first stone. That means people without sin can throw stones, right? And the idea that I have to leave it up to interpretation to be able to say, oh, but what he really meant was, you don't throw stones. Or you shouldn't throw stones because when Jesus says you could throw stones if you're perfect, what he really meant was, nobody's perfect, so no one should throw stones except for Jesus, or unless if you pray to Jesus and then you get your sins confessed. But then at that point, you still shouldn't throw stones because that's a sin and God doesn't like it. It's like you put so many levels of 3D chess on top of this that I'm just saying, like, it explicitly says here you can throw stones if you're perfect, right? Like, don't leave it up to interpretation. If you're a responsible figure, we have rules, we have laws that are so specific in their nature that they are meant to keep us safe.
Yeah. Well, the problem is at that particular time, it was okay, or a law that you can throw stones. Throwing the stones was not the sin. or breaking the
law.
No,
it
was insane? It was the adultery. You know, that was the sin, or even just sexual congress, because you know, it was a sin to have, you know, make love back then,
right?
And unless it was your marital partner.
And was it a thought sin? Was it one of the Ten Commandments sins? Did she just think about coveting someone's husband, and then that's why she got?
Well, that's what Jesus said. You know, even if you think about it, you've done it.
Yeah, it's messed up. It's messed up.
Right. Before the show, you were talking about a religious person telling another religious person what an atheist was.
Larry, so good. So we love video games, apparently, Larry. I hope you've been playing Guardians of the Galaxy. Or
I have. I'm kind of stuck right now. Can't progress forward.
Oh, no. We'll have to talk about why. Yeah, but there's another video game that I recently played called The Witness. And if you don't know what The Witness is, it's a game where you basically solve line puzzles on an island. It's a very chill game. When I said that as the premise, that is the game. You're basically like solving little cute mazes on panels that control different things on the island. So you have no instructions. So you solve some very simple puzzles. And then you realize when I solve a puzzle, a door opens or a bridge.
Sounds like Myst.
Exactly. It's a lot like Myst. And then you realize, oh, there's a logic to how I solve the puzzles versus how they affect the island. And that gives me access to more puzzles. There's still no explicit instructions, but it's fun coming up with rule sets and then challenging whether or not those rule sets are accurate or not based on how they affect the island around you. It's sort of like a work in science. It's really great. There are little audio logs, so it's not just all background music and atmosphere. There are people who talk if you click video logs, but the video logs are interesting because they're recordings of philosophers or quotes from philosophy books or religious passages as well. Not explicit religious passages saying like you should be a XYZ. It's more just like the concept of spirituality. They want you to fall into like a Zen-like state as you play the game. But as you get towards the end of the game, spoilers, the audio logs go from being passages that are recorded by the voice actors to behind the scenes conversations of people talking about what kind of passages they should throw into the game. And it's like,
really?
as you start to break the island with your ability to understand how the puzzles work, you start breaking the game with in terms of like access to conversations that happen towards making the game. And one of the conversations in The Witness is people around a table talking about, hey, we have a lot of spiritual passages in the game. Should we also throw in materialist and atheist points of views too? And another person in the round table says, I was thinking the same thing. However, what I found was that most atheist passages and what most atheists do in general is basically just shoot down the Christian version of God. And I find that that's kind of counterintuitive to the chill vibe that we're trying to put into our game.
Before the game, you were saying that the person was saying that what an atheist is just a person who hates the Christian God.
More or less. It's like what atheism typically boils down to is just people being very angry at the Christian God. And then everyone around the table was like, yeah.
That's nodding along.
And it's hard to find good quotes because all of them sort of boil down to just, oh, we hate Jesus, we hate God, we hate this. Is it sin delicious? And I thought to myself, I just wanted to say, like, guys, before you record this conversation about what atheism is and isn't, maybe you should just have someone in the room be like, hey, is any of us atheists? And if no one says yes, then you should be like, maybe we should ask an atheist what atheist is, and then ask them
Absolutely.
If they have any good quotes. Because if you ask, you might find some people who would be like, oh, I actually have some good quotes. And surprise, surprise, they don't necessarily come from old white guys. Like, they can come from a lot of different color people or women as well. There's YouTube channels that are constantly putting out great content that have great passages on atheism. And it's not hard to understand atheism when you have it. It's basically just believing something when you have enough evidence to believe it. If you don't have enough evidence to believe it, don't believe it.
What's funny is with the warm weather, I've been starting sitting out in the park again, you know, with my little atheist sign, ask an atheist, you know, sign. And hardly anybody ever comes over and talks. You know, they just don't want to know, apparently, or they're too insecure in their own beliefs to come over and talk. It's surprising that I can sit there for like an hour and, you know, people look at me and wave sometimes, but that's it. They don't come talk to me. Make it available.
Quickly adding to that, when I was at Pellissippi, I had a little sign up that had, you know, do you value truth? Are you a good person? Does a book dictate your morality? And let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people came up, but a lot of people just kind of, and they could have been going from A to B to C, could have been a busy schedule, but a lot of people read the sign and then contemplated it and walked off. And so, you know.
Yeah.
It's
different in the park. I mean, I go to the park, mm-hmm. nobody talks to me. I go on the university campus and I get a lot of people come up.
Yeah.
Because they are interested. They're looking for answers. They want to know.
Yeah.
And people in the park feel like they already know, I guess.
So it's a funny dichotomy here because you could be atheist at a table being like, hey, I'm an atheist. Please talk to me. And no one talks to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a video game about passages on atheism, people are like, well, we know what atheism is, but maybe it's this. And why are you guessing? Because there are atheists uh-huh. that would be happy to talk to you and explain to you what they're about. And they eventually just went to a Carl Sagan take. But like in my book, it's like, dude, atheism doesn't, there's no Mount Rushmore of atheism. It's just the default state until you've been convinced that something is true, right? And if that's the case, we were all atheists once. You just need someone to help you remember that, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you could be corralled into a belief, but you can also come out of it as well. But atheism is one very simple Venn diagram where the circle is you believe in a God, and literally the entire space, the eternity of everything around that is I don't believe in a God.
Right.
And there's mm-hmm. a lot more outside than there is on that inside. And mm-hmm. maybe that inside isn't even valid to be in justifiably.
Yeah. Sarah, do you have any comments on that?
About you ask an atheist? Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think we all walk around with atheist hats, so we're not necessarily easy to identify.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people don't want to know. Some people don't want to ask. I have family members that have never asked me, and so they have no clue.
Right. And sometimes we do wear hats.
and t-shirts.
Wait a second. Where are these hats?
Well, you can buy them on Amazon.
Yeah.
Atheist hats.
Oh, yeah.
Ball caps or whatever.
Yeah.
Or the lapel pins.
Yeah. And t-shirts. It's all, and pins. Mm-hmm.
The other idea is, so there are a lot of atheists that chew away at the idea of the Christian God specifically. And they are sometimes rude and argumentative and hostile in a lot of other cases too. And while, you know, I could definitely see that as well. I'm not saying that isn't the case, but I'm also going to say, so what? It's still true. It's still the valid position. Just because something's unpopular doesn't make it less true. And an unpopular true thing is still true. If I said, you know, despite what many people believe, this is actually the tallest mountain on Earth. And if my answer was Mount Everest, it's like, yeah, because Everest is the tallest mountain on Earth. It doesn't matter if a lot of people don't like that fact. It's mm-hmm. still a fact, right?
Or believe something else.
Right. It doesn't matter if I go on the street and be like, you're stupid if you don't believe Mount Everest is the tallest mountain in the world. And I have a little bar graph that just shows Mount Everest height. And mm-hmm. it's like the biggest bar on the bar graph. I'm like, if you don't believe this, you're an idiot. You are so stupid. And people are like, I hate this guy. You know what? I'm going to say Mount Whitney is the biggest mountain on the earth. It's like, no, don't do that. It's still true that Mount Everest is the tallest. It's just true that that guy might also be an asshole at the same time, too.
Yeah.
We have atheists that are definitely assholes. I'll grant you that. But the position of atheism is absolutely the most valid one to be. Of intellectual honesty, until you have a good reason that you can articulate or express that is convincing that warrants the belief of a God. And the God claim is, in my opinion, one of the most extraordinary claims that you can come up with. Until you have a mountain of evidence to support that claim, you're not justified to believe that. And my position of an atheist is, once that evidence comes, I will happily curb stomp atheism to the ground. I'll throw it away. I'll be happy to do so. But I am not able to convince myself that there's enough evidence to support or warrant belief in a God. Until then, I can't believe in that God. Guess what that puts me into a position of? I don't know if there's a God or not, but I know for a fact that I don't believe in that God. And that's atheism. And there's other versions of it too, but we all have the same consistent premise of we don't believe in that God. Whether we claim to know that there's no God or not, we still don't believe. That's all atheism is. It's just a question on belief. Riv, Sarah, what do you think? I can't say that word. I thought we could say that word. My bad. I thought we could say that word.
You have the positive, you have the soft, you have the hard version of it, and that's just the central theme is I'm not convinced when it comes down to it,
right?
You know, and people take that and they conflate it with these positive thoughts and beliefs of kind of a vile view, a vitriol view of everyone who believes, and it just gets things out of control. And it's just, no, I'm not convinced.
Got it.
It's the one that's, you know.
And technically, you can't hate a person or a thing that doesn't, that you don't believe exists. You can hate a fictional character like, I don't know, what's his name in Harry Potter. You can hate his actions and hate the story, his role in the story.
Voldemort. Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But, you know, we don't, atheists don't hate God.
No.
You know, he's, how can you hate like Santa Claus? You know, he doesn't bring you what you think you should
chime
have.
In on that real
please.
Quick? So we were talking about, you know, maybe the angry atheist trope that a lot of people have in their head. And yeah, there are some of us out there. And my 16-year-old, was getting on me a lot about, hey, how come every single time I bring up something about ghosts or, you know, the afterlife or anything like that, you jump down my throat with, well, that's not real. That's not real. Mm. And I'm like, because I don't want you to hold the illusions. I can't completely control what you think and believe, but at least I can tell you my perspective. And of course, they go by Aster, by the way. Aster Ooh. Says, well, you know, I just don't want you to just be so mean all the time. I'm like, well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you the difference between believing and knowing. And I think that really helped Aster kind of understand where I'm coming from. And I am coming from that default position of it doesn't exist until I see some proof.
Right. Or I don't have a reason to believe in it until I have a reason to believe in it.
Yeah,
I don't even
absolutely.
Know if it exists or not yet. I just know I don't have a reason to believe it until then, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially because I don't even know if there is anything not natural, anything supernatural. Where's the proof of supernatural to go before you even prove what is in the supernatural?
Right.
Because right now, where's the proof of supernatural?
Right. Right. Absolutely. I'd like to address this, why are atheists so angry?
Larry, you're going to do it now?
Real
How about we do it after the break, the bottom of the hour? You'll have all the time for
I've still got time. We've got 2.5 minutes that was just silence before we started.
All right. Fantastic.
Greta Christina wrote a book. Well, she started off with an article, but then she wrote a book out of it. 99 Reasons Why Atheists Are Angry and Have Every Right to Be So. Because of the problems of religion that religions cause in the world today. The misogyny, the campaign against science, just on and on about the things that religions do to hold progress back, politics, you name it. But anyway, we are angry about religion and the effects it has on the world. We're not angry at God. You know, that's all I really wanted to say before we go to break. So if you want to go to break, we can.
I want to keep talking about this, but I don't want the looming threat of an inevitable break interrupting your conversation. So how about we jump right back into it after we come back?
Sounds good. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour and WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
Let's take a trip to examine this common basis of life, a voyage to investigate the molecular machinery at the heart of life on Earth.
All life is related, and it enables us to construct with confidence the complex tree that represents the history of life. Our planet, the Earth, is, as far as we know, unique in the universe. It contains life.
Here, plants and animals proliferate in such numbers that we still have not even named all the different species. Darwin's great insight revolutionized the way in which we see the world. We now understand why there are so many different species.
Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe. Those are some of the things that molecules do. Given 4 billion years of evolution, we are, each of us, a multitude.
Now, how did the molecules of life arise?
It began in the sea some 3,000 million years ago. Complex chemical molecules began to clump together. These were the seeds from which the tree of life developed. They were able to split, replicating themselves as bacteria.
The secrets of evolution are time and death. There's an unbroken thread that stretches from those first cells to us. The secrets of evolution are time and death. There's an unbroken thread that stretches from those first cells to us. Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe. Those are some of the things that molecules do. Given 4 billion years of evolution, we are, each of us, a multitude.
There isn't a sharp line dividing humans from the rest of the animal kingdom. It's a very wuzzy line. It's a very wuzzy line. It's getting wuzzier all the time. We find animals doing things that we, in our arrogance, used to think was just human. It's a very wuzzy line. It's getting wuzzier all the time.
Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe. Those are some of the things that molecules do. Given 4 billion years of evolution, we are, each of us, a multitude. Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe.
Our planet, the Earth, is, as far as we know, unique in the universe. It contains life. Its continued survival now rests in our hands.
Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Freethought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 22nd year now and have over 1,100 members. We have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. If it's, look for us inside at high top tables, or if it's pretty weather, outside on the deck. You can find us online on Facebook, meetup.com, or at our website, knoxvilleatheist.org. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one, start one. Wombat, we were talking about angry atheists, I think, before. You want to pick up there?
Sure. The idea that, you know, just because there are a lot of atheists takes away from the argument of atheism is, or the stance of atheism, which is simply, hey, don't believe things until you have a good reason to believe them, doesn't affect the weight or the validity of that position. It just means that a lot of atheists live in a world where they're surrounded by people who are believing things that don't have a good reason to believe in them. And that could be like a Twilight Zone-esque level of frustration where you wake up and you realize there's a lot of religious harm going on. Why aren't we stopping it? It's such an obvious thing. I'm in this weird dimension where everyone's constantly banging their head on the ceiling or on a wall. Just stop doing that. You don't have to do it. It's like, oh, why are you so angry? Why are you telling me what to do? It's like, because I hate seeing you hurt yourself, because it affects my life. Because now I'm the guy that's running around with Band-Aids, and there's other things that I'd like to do with my
time. And affects new generations, the kids, right? You know, going forward, it just pushes it into the future.
Speaking of religious harm, Sarah, did you have a thing you'd like to add on that?
Yeah, I've got this fun little list that I've been working on. I add to it every time I identify something that's another harm that's caused by religion. This is not necessarily towards one particular religion. However, you might be able to identify. Let's start with child brides,
Ooh.
vaccine deniers,
Sure.
forced birth,
Yep.
anti-birth control, anti-marriage equality, racism,
Sure. Easy.
slavery,
Yeah, absolutely.
avoiding the doctor, also known as faith healing,
Yep.
religious otherizing, child, I don't want to say on the radio, cover up in church. It's not about protecting the abused, it's about protecting the system. You know, move the priest somewhere else. Another one is mega churches, also known as con artists, taking away money from desperate poor people.
Yes. Not only,
Gay conversion therapy.
just to also add on top of that one too,
Yeah.
property taxes of churches. Any
Oh, tell me.
church
Yeah.
that exists doesn't pay property taxes in the US.
Yeah.
And so if you live in a town surrounded by churches, which we do in our
Yeah.
particular location, that school money that isn't going to schools because
Yeah.
schools are funded on property taxes. So typically a
Amazing.
lot of churches around you is a good indication that
Yeah.
you live in a bad school system.
Oh,
Isn't that
wow.
crazy?
You know, actually, you just opened up my eyes to my own town. Okay. I have a couple more to go through.
Okay.
Gay conversion therapy, religious terrorists. There are those, you know, they
Sure.
use, misogyny, checking out from reality. Yeah, that's really what you do.
Schizophrenia. Yeah.
Fallacious thinking, magical thinking, genocide.
Oh, that's a big one.
I know. I know it is. I know, especially right now. False hope.
Sure.
I hope I can say this on the radio, anti-masturbation.
Yeah.
What? She could say that and I couldn't. All right, fair enough. Larry,
Well, it's a
Larry's your
technical
final.
term. It's a
No, I'm
technical.
just playing around with Larry. I'm just playing around with Larry. But
Okay, there's a
the
couple
fact
more
that
and then I'm all done. Protesting at funerals. Okay, you've heard of this, protesting at funerals. And
No,
then
I've never heard of what's protesting at funerals. Does that actually occur?
that there are churches that do that.
I can't remember the
Protest
name of the church, but I know what
at
you're talking
funerals.
about. So after someone already dies, there'll be a
Yes.
church that'll go to be like, and he was
Westboro Baptist.
oh yeah, say he's in hell now. You know,
Yes.
he because he's not
It's
he has not
terrible.
accepted Christ, or he's not
Yeah,
part of
yeah,
our
yeah.
church or whatever.
Westboro Baptist Church.
Yeah, there
They're
you
a
go.
family
So,
lawyer, supposedly.
we'll just stop with that one because that's really so desperate. But yeah, there's my little list. It kind of reminds me of why I have a reason to be in, I don't know, an angry atheist if I have a particular bad day. But I like to talk about the religious harm from the systems and not necessarily the people who are religious, because the people who are religious are not necessarily bad people.
Right.
Just acting on bad ideas.
Yeah, but you can have enough. Here's my other thing too. You can overwhelm yourself with enough bad ideas to where you just become a bad person by association. Even if you
And
are a good person, you just become so toxic that it's not worth
you're right, it can
my
change
standard of
you.
friendship. Yeah, exactly. And I think if you are listening to the show, you are a person that matters and your friendship has value and you should spend it with people that can value that friendship. And if you are hanging around people who don't value you, the real you, your authentic self, because they have a bias that was given to them, even if they
Right.
don't harbor it, but they still enact it through their actions. You don't have to engage with a person like that. You can determine your
Move
own
on.
value and move on. There's enough people who will have
Create
to
a new
accept it.
circle of friends.
Right. Make a new family of atheists.
Yeah.
We're, you know,
When
we'll
I
fight the
started
curse.
ASK, I didn't know a single other atheist in Knoxville. Now I know at least 1,100 of them.
Very cool. It's very cool. I wanted to throw out one last my angry piece. My angry piece would be if you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth and I'm speaking English, then there is a very good chance that you have been affected by Christian harm. And the reason why I make that a point is, why are there so many atheists that are angry about the Christian God? It's because I'm speaking to you in English and I'm talking about atheism. If I was talking to you in Farsi or Urdu and talking about how hard it is to be an atheist, we might be talking about completely different contexts of gods, right? But if I'm speaking to you in English, right, and especially with an American accent, and my skin color is not white, there's a history of why I can say Christianity has impacted both my ancestry, my background, where I grew up with, what things I had to watch out for in order to be safe as a person in this country, and what attitudes I have to constantly address and deal with on a day-to-day basis, as well as into the future. If I have kids, this will be the environment that I'll have to raise them up in, and what sort of misconceptions will they encounter, and how they have to spend time addressing how to navigate people's feelings that are in positions of institutionalized power so that they don't get harmed in the same way that Sarah brought up in her list. It's a very specific target of ire from my point of view when I'm telling you that I'm an atheist in English. And that's why the Christianity God comes up all the time. Yes, there are a lot of, we would prefer if none of the gods or none of the proposed characters of gods existed or was believed in so reverently. But we are impacted by largely one of them. And that's why the Christian God just keeps coming up. It's because, you know, we speak English and there's a whole history behind that. I won't get
into it. Not only that, but most of us were raised in that religion.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, I was raised Baptist. You were raised
everything. Pentecostal, everything. Baptist, Methodist, Lutheran, yeah. Evangelical. Yeah.
Riv, what were you raised in?
Southern Baptist.
And Sarah?
Oh, my family tried to indoctrinate me. It didn't really work, but usually it's Catholic light, also known
Episcopalian. Yeah. No, my point was that you know, most religious people think that atheists never believed in God and we don't understand their religion, and they try to tell us about it. But we were raised in that religion, and most of them were just from flavors of Christianity, but we know it inside and out. And we've come to the conclusion that it's simply false.
Yep. Yep. I want to add something to the list as we transition topics too, because Sarah, I'm not sure if it's worthwhile since you ended on genocide. So my next one is not as lame, but I would say one of the concepts of religious harm that I've noted is that they make very simple arguments, very complex arguments. Like they unnecessarily complicate things when you, one of the effects of religious harm. And one of the things I've noted is that, like, when something's very simple, which is, in my opinion, going from a descriptor to an identifier, right? Religion will come and be like, I have opinions on this. I'd like to challenge this simplicity with some more complexity. For example, some of the people that I've met in the past, whether through touring and doing my talks or just from different schools, when I first meet them, before I even know their name or anything like that, I might use a pronoun to describe what I see of what they are. It's like, oh, here's a guy, or this dude, or this lady, or something like that. And if they correct me and they say, actually, my pronouns are XYZ, then it's like, okay, I was using the initial pronoun as a descriptor, but now that I know who you are, I'm going to switch to an identifier pronoun and I'm going to call you that. And it's not a problem for me to just parse that in my head of like, okay, this person goes by she, her, this guy goes by he, him. Not a problem for me.
It's just respectful. It is just respectful to use the pronoun they prefer.
Right. And it's I'm identifying like, them now.
It's yeah? like when they tell you your name, you know, my name is John, but I prefer to be called Jake. You know, something exactly. like that. You don't call them John just because that's their name.
Point. Yes. So I work at a site that has a lot of people from China. They have names that are hard for American people to say. Some of them have an American name. And even if I make an effort to try to learn how to say their name, my tones are off. And they're just like, just call me Stanley or just call me Jerry or whatever. And in my mind, I feel bad, but like that's how they want to be identified. So it doesn't matter how I feel, like how I want to call them. I'm not going by the descriptor of what I see. Like, oh, it's a Chinese guy. I'm going to try to call him by a Chinese name. I'm going to identify them on their terms, right?
Right. And
I can make that switch very easy, whether it's the name someone wants to be called, the nickname they want to be used, or the pronoun that they want to be used. That's an easy thing for me to do. But when religion comes in, it's like, hey, by the way, I have opinions on what are this and what's that and who should be able to do this and who shouldn't be able to do that. Unless if they're without sin, they can throw stones at
and they will so quickly turn to legislation to put it into law. So you have to.
Yes. You know, and now let me tell you what bathrooms to go to. And now let me tell you who can actually be married. And now let me tell you who can adopt. Right. And now let me tell you who has hospital rights. And I'm just like, oh my God, religion, get out of here. Mm-hmm. This was an easy thing. We already figured this out.
You know, I love it when the parents are like, well, you know, all this pronouns and trans stuff, you know, what am I going to tell my kids? And I want to tell the parents, your kids already know. Mm. Your kids are ahead of you.
Yeah.
So you don't have to explain anything to them because they know.
Yeah. You taught them how to be nice to each other in kindergarten or before.
Yeah, if they have
just let them go. Let them be there.
Yeah.
It's one of these arbitrary rules on top of it.
Go ahead, Riff. Did you have something to add?
Oh no. It's one of those things that seems to be a generational zeitgeist thing, which I'm glad for.
You know, I'll throw this out too. In the world of science, we go from descriptors to identifiers back to descriptors all the time, because what we really care about is coming up with models to explain reality. And you can have competing models as long as you're being clear about which model you're using. One of the examples I like is, I used to say, and it's still true in some contexts, is I have five fingers, right? And like people have five fingers, they have 10 fingers, but I have five fingers on this hand, right? In some contexts, linguistically, the thumb is not a finger. It's like a prehensile ligament, because the musculature is unique compared to the other four that are on your hand. So they consider that a different thing other than a finger, and they come up with the word digit. And I'm like, that's fine too. I have four digits and one prehensile ligament. In some layman sense, I have five fingers. In more strict sense, I have four fingers and an extra appendage on my hand. And then if I was going to put this into even greater scopes, in bifurcations of science, when talking about like central nervous systems, they just call these all fingers. They're all the same thing, because from a central nervous system perspective, they all operate on the same impulses. There's no difference. They're not basing it on the musculature. So as you go down different realms of science, and it's the same thing for planets, it's the same thing for what constitutes as a fish or a bird, or what's a type of DNA versus what's not a type of DNA, you might see that the descriptions go from, I'm just describing this loosely, to I have a very strict definition, to from that definition, we're in a new scope of science where it becomes a description. But it's this back and forth and the context that we're providing that helps to, in my opinion, build a better appreciation of the fact that there's a lot of nuance to with how we describe things, and that whether we're using a descripting term or identifying term, if we boil down to that person or that item or that material, we realize that there's just a wealth of diversity there. And we're only limited by our words and how to describe it. In my opinion, I find that beautiful, because then science just becomes an exploration of how unique and how cool things are. And if I give you two rocks and you're like, those are both rocks, you're like, no, this is igneous rock. This is metamorphic rock. And there's like variations of metamorphic rock. And this one has a layer of plastic in it. Isn't that insane? Like, I love science because of that. And so let's not fight against it. Let's not come up with hard terms for anything. Let's just recognize that all the words we're using are evolutions of way how we're expressing the world that's around us. And as we grow to appreciate the world and its complexity, we should appreciate that words can change, and we should be able to jump back and forth between descriptions and identifiers without any sort of inhibition brought to us by dogma or dogmatic thinking.
Well, you were talking about, before the show, you were talking about those ideas in reference to what an atheist is, or how we identify an atheist.
Absolutely.
How do we describe an atheist? And then go ahead.
So like, they're angry atheists. That's a good description. But I think the identity of what an atheist is very clear. It's just a person that doesn't believe in a God claim. And when I say that, I mean, even the most religious person on the planet is atheistic to the grand majority of all God claims that are presented.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about that, then a person who believes in no God claims is at most just one God removed from even the most ardent monotheist that exists. And when you realize that, then you realize, oh my gosh, we're really not that different. You just need to apply the same reasoning that you're using for all these other gods that you don't believe in to the one God that you do believe in, because that's what an atheist is doing. They're just being consistent with how they are approaching belief in a God. And as soon as you get over that double standard or that hypocrisy, you will recognize, like, oh my gosh, if I just treat all gods the same way, and if, in terms of my criteria for belief in them, I realize I don't have a basis for this belief either. I can't be convinced. I can claim that I'm a Christian. I can claim that I'm an Islamic follower, but like, there's no basis for me to believe it if I'm if I'm coming up with a different standard. That is the heart of it, in my opinion. I think that's
it's easier on other levels too, as well. Like the lack of evidence. I mean, to me, the lack of evidence is the main thing.
Yep.
We have no evidence of a heaven or a hell. We have no evidence of any kind of life after death.
But we do have evidence for souls.
We don't. You knew exactly where I was going. No evidence for souls. No evidence for the physical existence of Jesus, actually. Mm. No evidence for the slavishness in Egypt of the Jewish people. You know, it goes on and on and on.
It does.
And the only counter to it is the propaganda that the church pushed forward.
Yes. And speaking of need for consistency and the ability for religion or dogma to complicate what could be very straightforward argumentation, there's a disc golfer whose name is Nat Ryan. We talked about her on the show previously. She's M to F, male to female, trans person who competes in the FPO, the Female Professional Open for disc golf. And previously last sport year, she was barred from play and she sued the disc golf league. I don't want to go into more, any more terms than that, because saying like, hey, you're doing that to me is unfair, which brought up a lot of ire from people who are saying, well, trans people shouldn't be able to play against females because, and they had the scientific rulings and they had the religious rulings. And then unfortunately that fight just became a quagmire of very angry people, very passionate about what they believe to be true. When the argument that was presented, I feel like could have been far more simple. The argument that I appreciated that was presented was from Nat's point of view. And Nat has, by the way, a very bad personality. I'm just throwing that out as well. So she wasn't helping the situation either. But the argumentation brought by our lawyer was very straightforward, which was, hey, you know, you let me play, there's tiers of disc golf play. You let me play in the C leagues, which is like the extreme amateur level. You let me play in the B leagues. You let me play in the A leagues. You let me play legally in the A tier tournaments. You let me play in the major tournaments that happened that cashed out money. And then only in the final tournament, this one tournament that existed, you know, you said, oh, the finals? No, you can't play in this because you're M to F trans. And my opinion is that's the equivalent of like saying, you know, as a baseball league, well, you let me play in elementary, you let me play in middle school, you let me play in the little leagues, you let me play in the minor leagues, you let me play for college, and then you let me play in the major leagues, you let me win a pennant, and then at the World Series, you're like, oh, but no Puerto Ricans allowed. They can run faster than everybody else. That's not allowable. I'm like, in my mind, the argumentation doesn't need to be based on the idea of a trans. It should be based on the consistency of the sports body, because I think anyone could understand that this is not a consistently applied rule, that there's some sort of weird ambiguity here that's affecting someone's being able to play. And either be consistent with your rule and allow, like, hey, this is the rule that we're putting down as a private organization, or allow it because you can't just change, you can't flip-flop on that at the very last stage. That would be my thought process. And I think the reason why I'm presenting this is I'd love an open dialogue on the idea of, like, wouldn't there be a realm where more simplistic argumentation could exist without dogma coming in and adding in their points of view? Because I think once you go supernatural, it's really hard to go back to basis. Riff, Sarah, what do you think?
So you want to go? I had a thought.
Full disclosure, I have a child who is trans. They go by he, him pronouns. However, they identify as genderless, which may not be something that you're aware of. It's somehow different from non-binary, but it's pretty close to non-binary.
That's pretty close to where I'm at, actually. I understand
genderless.
That people have it, but I wouldn't go out of my way to say that I have a very strong gender in my own opinion. I think I understand what your kid's coming from. I have a very similar vibe where it's like, that sounds like a really complicated thing.
It is.
Glad that
and
you got one, but I don't know if I relate.
There's even a more complicated reason why Aster goes by he, him pronouns.
Mm.
But I'm not even going to get into it because I don't want to misrepresent.
Sure.
I don't want to say the wrong thing. However, I just want to say way before my kid came out, I already had, you know, a lot of thoughts on, you know, trans sports issues because especially in the atheist community, there was a little bit of a hoopla for a while there about whether or not they should be allowed and, you know, the science and all that good stuff. And they're trying to like appeal to science and all that. But, you know, it's crazy because it's really a problem when it happens with female sports, even though they don't actually care about female sports. If mm-hmm. you really think about it, it's not like a lot of people actually care. They just want to have a boogeyman, you know? And so they want to make this, you know, their issue because they can't talk about anything that's real. So they have their boogeyman. And honestly, I like to put myself in the other people's shoes. So if mm-hmm. I was going male to female mm-hmm. and I was an athlete mm-hmm. and I thought, cool, I've got this ability. I need to be out there and, you know, strutting my stuff and I hone in on a particular sport that I'm good at and all that. Where do I go?
Right.
I go with the female sport because right now a lot of sports are divided, male and female. And so that's where we want to go. And are people proposing that the athletes who go from male to female that they don't compete with the women, are they proposing that they go compete with the men? They're not doing that. They're basically proposing that they are just not allowed to compete at all.
In this story, and definitely that is the case, but in the story for disc golf, what they have is a mixed division that's for anyone, men and women both compete in it. And then one that's specifically just for females, like they have specifically just for people who are under 14, specifically for people who are over 40. And for Nate Ryan's point of view, she was like, you've always let me compete in the FPO, but now at this one tournament, you won't let me compete in the FPO. What's going on? And I was just like, it should be a more consistent message. In the greater aspect of sports, I can see that there's a greater divide. Larry, what do you think?
Well, you were talking about consistency.
Yes, I just want consistency. That's it.
And, well, I can see an example that would be consistent, but still unfair.
Yep.
Like you have the American League, and they would allow, you know, male to female fans to do it. The National League has a consistent rule. You can't.
Sure.
But then they play all the way through the season. They get all mm-hmm. the way up to the World Series. They compete. And then she's not allowed to play, or he
right.
is not allowed to play. And mm-hmm. they're consistent rules, but it's still kind of unfair from one perspective.
No, I get you.
It's just an idea.
No, that's true. You could still be consistent and unfair. I think that's such a great point. I think there's also the idea of like, there was a point in time where black people weren't allowed to play baseball with white people, right? Mm-hmm. And that was a very consistent rule back in the time, but in mm-hmm. no way was that
was
fair.
It fair. Right.
But the idea of like, what can we do to add less complexity to this argument? So that we can have like a basic conversation on what fairness looks like. I don't think religion provides anything to the table that helps to add more resolution to a more reasonable or more fair mm-hmm. path forward. In fact, I find that it only makes more people aggravated and upset and unwilling to like look at a problem for what the problem actually is, whether it's a consistent issue or a fairness issue. And I think if you just took religion out of it, dogma out of it, and just said, where are the lines not connecting on this argument? Okay, is it here and here and here? Let's just address these. And if it turns out the case that, you know, black people are just physically superior. maybe we could just have like the Black League, or maybe we could just let them play, and then eventually they take over the sport, like how they did with the NFL. And oh no, Tiger Woods is good at playing. Oh no, there's too many good black sports. We made a mistake. We need to come up with new sports that black people won't do, like skydiving and that weird thing they do on the middle of the ocean with that big.
They already did. It's called hockey.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's like black people won't want to play those. Like, for now, wait. Just wait. Just wait until there's money behind it. Then we'll know. Then we'll know. And then like, you've already tainted the waters. But the idea is take religion out, make the argument a little more easy, keep the contention a lot easier to look at, because a lot of people have a lot of trauma and hurt or interests in an agenda that they're trying to purport or trying to prove that they're perfect so they can start throwing some stones. And I just feel like that makes all these conversations more complicated when they don't need
it. We need to start winding down.
Sure.
Where can we find? Go ahead, Rip.
Yeah.
We're the one to say at the end there was that, look at it from the science. There are plenty of cases of where trans people would compete in higher end leagues and they still lose. Because you have people who have been cis and professional their whole life, and they still win. So it's look at the case by case. Look at what the your understanding of it outside of any kind of religious belief, and then maintain consistency as though, from the reference frame, these are the rules. These are the understandings. Mm-hmm. Stick by that.
Yeah.
It seems like
any last words there, Riv?
I have a last word.
Sarah.
Okay, really quick. They talk about they don't want trans people in sports because it's not fair. Sports are not fair.
Mm-hmm.
It's a genetic lottery.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. Some people are better than others. Some people are taller. Some are smaller, slower, faster.
Things, but yeah. if you genetically have, you know, better muscles, better whatever, then you shouldn't be allowed to compete because you're better. Nope. It's just a genetic lottery. So I don't think that should have a play in it. I think it's already unfair. If you want to make it fair, do like weight classes, you know?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep, I like the weight class argument. Also, there's a socioeconomic aspect of it too. That just because
it's a business, sports are a business, mm-hmm. and if you can, in my opinion, if you're a private business, that gives you more authority to do basically whatever you want. But you're on an open market, right? And so, if there's an organization that says we won't let trans people play with women, and there's another organization that comes up and says we will let them, let's see what happens. Let them compete. And at that point, I'm like, they made the rules. They're on the open market. Let them do what they want, but just have the opportunity to, you know, mm-hmm. give the options for players.
Right.
Though I will say this, I love female sports. I know there's an opinion that people don't. I love female sports. Bouldering is one of my favorite sports. I can name way more women than I can men. And disc golf is like one of the one things where I love watching female players play, because I feel like their strategy of approaching the game mimics how I could do, because I can't throw a disc 800 feet. But when a woman plays, it's like I'm going to be very strategic with my placement of the disc, and I love that strategy that comes with it. It's a completely different game.
Well said.
I love seeing that theme.
And we've got to end now.
Cool.
There is one more show. You can find this show on podcasts everywhere. Just search for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. And we'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock here on WZO Radio. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.